Hello and welcome to this special episode of the Scottish Football Show. This is the second of three standalone shows this month where we will be celebrating the incredible achievements of Scottish sides reaching major European finals, with three of the biggest clubs in the country all celebrating landmark anniversaries this year. In this episode, we're focusing on Rangers and the Ibrox club's unlikely and ultimately unlucky run to the UEFA Cup final in Manchester in the 2007-08 season. Hard to believe it's already been 15 years. In this episode, we're going to be joined by former Rangers midfielder Kevin Thompson, an integral part of that side that made it all the way to Manchester.
Adams inside! Goalkeeper's hesitated, the flag stays down, Beasley! This is amazing! Kazan looking for the double, the goalkeeper spilled it, and Stephen Murray scores for Rangers!
Yet again, Alan McGregor, wonderful save.
Davis, and he curls, that must be a great goal! Rangers have scored, Jean-Claude Dachibiel!
Stephen Whittaker! Rangers semi-final!
Is he supposed to do that, Stephen Whittaker?
Nacho Novo with one kick of the ball to take Rangers to Manchester. Manchester, brace yourself.
Rangers are coming!
The Scots are heading for Manchester, and you know what? Manchester may not be big enough. Walter Smith has guided them to their fourth major European final.
Kevin, thanks so much for joining us on the show. I'm trying to think back of what I was doing in 2008. I just started uni. I actually used to run the university football team, Kev, at Ayr Campus. It was UWS. It was a music course I actually did. There was loads of football nuts there, but it was all musicians and actors or teachers. And the best players were tend to be the teachers. But yeah, I used to take the team. And famously, in the campus, we spent 3 years and never won a single game. In fact, even more famously, Ayr came down. Apparently, James Forrest was there as well. This was 2008, so he was a young boy, but he was at Ayr, I think, as a young boy. And they watched our first game against Glasgow Cali, and we got pumped 8-0. That was my managerial career. And I'm now 35, and I'm looking at, you know, players now, and I'm thinking, I'm never going to make it as a footballer anymore. But back then, I still had that belief. However, you were actually doing it at the top level. So let's get into the football, because 2007-08, it was the year that Walter Smith came back in his first full season back in charge in his second spell. He came back to Ibrox in early January 2007, taking over, I think it was Paul Le Guin, which was an interesting era. But you joined the club in January as well. What was that like, joining Rangers?
I think it's always hard when you look back, because you get... Obviously, I was leaving a club that I loved, and it probably never quite worked out. I didn't know anything different, really. You know, when I'd left Coventry as a young boy, and my first opportunity to sign with kind of YTS at Hibs was, it's all we really knew, the kind of young croppy players, do you know what I mean? We turning up at Easter Road and jumping on minibuses or jumping in boys' cars to obviously go to training, etc. And probably never really having any real hiccups, apart from obviously my serious knee injury, so probably never really had any flack. And in that last 4 or 5 weeks, obviously, before moving to Rangers, was a real tough time, to be fair, when you look back. It's hard, because I would like to always be respectful of the clubs, and I think people obviously know that about me. In a perfect world, would you would leave on the perfect day, the perfect fee, and be able to go back and hold everybody's hands and everybody be happy, but sometimes it's just not quite possible that way. So I think the upside of that with my kind of 3.5-4 years at the club were quite successful, which I think then you can look back at that stint and thinking it was the right time to move. And when that opportunity comes along, and I think people sometimes get their knickers in a twist when you say that you're a young Scottish player and you've got aspirations to play at X, Y or Z club. The harsh reality is the Old Firm is the kind of pinnacle in Scotland, really. So if you maybe bypass that, and I know an Aberdeen fan or a Dundee United fan or a Dundee fan would say the pinnacle was playing for Dundee or Dundee United, I get that. But when that opportunity did arise for me, it was really hard to knock back, and it kind of come out of the blue, to be honest. I did think for a long time I was going to sign for Celtic, and then we had a lot of interest and a lot of offers down south as well. So when that day did come to make that opportunity to move, it was a no-brainer for me. And to say at 21/22, I think I was when I signed to get an opportunity to play for a club like Rangers was extra special.
You were Walter Smith's, you were one of three kind of major signings he made that January when he first came in. So David Weir and Ugo Ehiog came in as a kind of centre-back pairing because I think he was trying to focus on the defence, and yourself. And actually the run you went on after you signed Kevin, Rangers only dropped, I think, 4 points between January and May, including two quite big wins over Celtic. What was it like working under Walter Smith at that point? What was your first 6 months at the club like? Because he's kind of, because of his second spell at the club, he's kind of deified now, not just by Rangers fans, but kind of by football fans in general. But was it markedly different working under him than it had been under other coaches that you'd worked under previously?
I think they've all got their own special traits, but listen, Walter was right at the top, and I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you speak about Walter, how high, well, he's held in the best regard really by everybody associated with the club. That's just how special he was. But don't quote me on the numbers, but I'm pretty sure we were 18, 19, 20 points behind Celtic when I first joined in January. It just shows how well Walter done, really, to get to UEFA Cup final, his first full season, but also to, I hate the word, but that gap that Celtic had over us, because they were a terrific team with terrific players and a really good manager in Gordon Strachan as well. So it was really tough to turn that tide. But if anyone could, Walter could. When I look back, I'm probably lucky to be able to rub shoulders with people like Costes and Durantes, and, you know, Sandy Jardine, rest his soul, was still around the club. You know, John Gregg, special people that were associated to the club. And that.
Yeah.
I then inherited a brilliant captain in Barry Ferguson, who was the same, you know, led through the front, was Mr. Blue, really carried a lot of the flak for the younger players, a lot of the flak for the whole team, to be honest, when things didn't go so well. So looking back, I feel as well I was probably quite lucky. I do think to get to work under the greatest and then have the people as allies and people to help you along just made my time extra special, really. And, you know, friends for life, people that you could pick up the phone at any time you want. And the harsh reality is, I know that there's far better players that played for Rangers than I have, but when you get an opportunity to be successful at the club and you give your all, is probably why 15 years on you still get to speak about different opportunities that you had at the club, which for me just makes the club special.
Who was one of the key teammates of yours that maybe helped you settle at Rangers or get you kind of you know, ready to play at that top level amongst the squad?
We just had a brilliant blend, really. And looking back at that squad, you know, you're having people like Big Hugo Egyog, you know, opportunities to, whether you're sitting in the sauna or the jacuzzi or sitting in the change room or sitting up at lunch and just seeing how these guys operated, really. Davey Weir, you know, always in the steam room, to be fair, every day after prayers. Whenever you wanted to pick Big Dave's ear, you could go in through a hazy smoke, really, and just see Big Dave sitting in the corner of the steam room, and you could ask him financial advice, you could ask him literally anything, really. So your life changes a wee bit when you move as a young player from Hibs to Rangers, and the kind of scrutiny that you get, the off-field stuff that you get, and then obviously the financial gain as well. Do you know what I mean? You probably can easily take your eye off the ball and go on a different path. So without missing anywhere out, I just think we had a brilliant blend. People talk about learning. You were learning every day at Rangers, because if you never, you didn't last very long. Yeah. And we were probably lucky that the people that we did get to learn off, even though your Coises and your Durantes were brilliant people to have around, for not just the fact that they were legends, but the camaraderie that these type of guys brought because of the era that they played in. Everybody knows the joking and the banter and the kind of jovial banter that these guys had. Just made really our time easy, really.
Yeah.
Jimmy Bell, you know, another one, the unofficial gaffer for me, guys around the building that gave us young players great opportunities to continue to pick their brain, really. And if you were a sponge like I was, even though I'd like to think I've got a big personality and a big opinion, I was still one for taking up and picking up wee snippets off of every person that I kind of rubbed shoulders with. So I felt I was a wee bit lucky to kind of inherit that kind of group of people that I got to work with.
Just looking specifically at the 2007-2008 season, Walter Smith had shaped his squad ahead of that season with a kind of mix of international players, the likes of Carlos Queller, DeMarcus Beasley coming in, Daniel Kuzan, as well as this young Scottish talent that you're talking about. Barry Ferguson was already at the club, Chris Boyd, Stephen Whittaker that summer followed you from Edinburgh to Glasgow, and Stephen Naismith arrived from Kilmarnock. Did you guys have a level of confidence heading into the 2007-2008 season, given how well you'd finished the previous campaign? And was there even an inkling that you might be able to make a mark on Europe as well as on a domestic front?
I think when you think of momentum and how important Old Firm games are, whether you're way in front, whether you're winning titles or you're not, and I kind of flip that question a wee bit. I think back to us winning the league 2009-2010 and Celtic beating us at Celtic Park 2-1 and them doing a lap of honour and us sitting in the bus with a winner's medal in our back pocket, demoralised, how much a sucker punch that was. So then I flipped that back to Walter's first 2-0 Firm game, and the 1-0 Ugegeorg won, and I think it was 2-0 or 3-0 at Ibrox.
Yeah.
The old Firm games were us building blocks to going on and being successful, and obviously everybody knows that Walter won 3 in a row. And by the way, Celtic were a brilliant team, but we had to believe that we could turn that tide, and probably having people like Barry's that had been around the block, that had done it, Walters, Coisty's, Girani's, that winning mentality, that drive, that desire every day. And then it was up to us young players to either swim in the same direction as them and pull their weight and make sure we were bringing something to the party. Are you never lasted?
Rangers continuing to control. Thompson, I mean, his jersey pull, but he continues. Ferguson on to Beasley. Thompson wants it. Beasley's going to go himself. Wrap the right foot round. Rangers are through to the third round of qualifying in the Champions League. DeMarcus Beasley scores for the first time for Rangers. A nice drive, it opened up for him. And it's Zetanil, Rangers 1. They don't flick on, Vanny Ferguson going through, Nacional! Nacional gives Rangers the lead they so desperately wanted to take to Belgrade. And it's the man who's so popular around these parts, Nacional with a goal.
Rangers fans, in a party. It's over! Rangers have done it! They will be joining the elite of Europe in the Champions League. Job done! Job very well done in Belgrade.
Well, obviously you got to the Champions League. You beat the Montenegrin champions FK Zeta. Got rid of Red Star Belgrade as well, 1-0. I think a late Nacho Novo winner. And so Champions League group draw happens. What do you do as a set of players? Do you all get together to watch it together, or are you always... I mean, I'm trying to think back in 2008. I think I got my first mobile phone in 2006, so like, it's not like these days, is it? What did you do back then? Did you all watch the draw together? Is Ali McCoy's not throwing a barbecue or something like that, going, right, lads?
If it was in somewhere like Switzerland or whatever, it wouldn't surprise me if Coyster was here. Probably he's been somewhere. The only thing I can vaguely remember when obviously the draw came out, one, you're excited, but two, like the banter within the lads was like French champions, Spanish champions and German champions, like,
yeah,
this could be tough, thinking where you're getting points and do you know what I mean, you don't want to embarrass yourself, and listen, we're going to need to be at our brilliant best really to have any opportunity to even compete with these. So that Barcelona team within probably the next 2 or 3 years, including that year, were probably one of the best Barcelona teams ever.
Mm-hmm. I think that was the thing, because like when I was looking back over the Champions League games, I'm a Rangers fan, so it was nice to relive, you know, the coming from behind to beat Stuttgart at home in the opening game.
Driven in towards Cacao, and it's a goal! Mario Gomez was the man who got onto it, and Rangers taken by surprise. Great run by Alan Hutton. Can he take it all away? Adams inside! Made the run and he has found him. Alan Hutton taken down is the penalty. Darshville has the opportunity to put them in a winning position. You can feel the tension at Ibrox. Darshville scores! Rangers have turned it around!
And of course, the 3-0 away win in France, which it turned a lot of heads.
And it's headed in! Lee McCulloch has thundered in a header, and what about this? Rangers lead in Lyon. Brave enough to venture forward. Kuzan looks to turn, and it just gets better and better for Rangers. It's 2-0. Look at the delight of Kuzan. Look at the delight of those fans. They are in dreamland here. Kuzan, and Beasley's forward if he can find him. The goalkeeper's hesitated. The flag stays down. Beasley! This is amazing! DeMarcus Beasley has probably finished Lyon off once and for all!
I know they could have forecast this result.
It is a glorious night in Europe for Rangers Football Club. They have trashed the French champions in their own backyard.
A 3-0 victory for Walter Smith's team, but more than that, a really hard-working performance in which they gave their all. Bring on Barcelona. Lyon 0, Rangers 3.
On paper, even looking back now, it was huge. You know, you're playing the champions of Spain, the champions of France, and the champions of Germany. But as you're saying, like, it's Barcelona, if they're not already there, they're on their way to becoming the Barcelona team of this generation. And also Lyon at that point, I think they were six titles deep into a 7-in-a-row run. It's their greatest period ever in their history.
I think they go over to France and beat Lyon, who were fully superstars as well. And they obviously beat Stuttgart in the opening game with German internationals on their bench. I think just shows how much belief Walter had in that group. And probably pound for pound how much he got out of that group, because the harsh reality is we probably shouldn't have been able to compete and have a goal, but we did. I think when you look at being on the pitch with Iniesta and Xavi against Brahim and Dani, Kevin Thompson and Barry Ferguson, the harsh reality is we struggled to lay a glove, but you find a way, you roll your sleeves up, you believe, you walk on that pitch thinking that we need to win. That's the one thing that I used to get caught a wee bit with, a sail between my wings, was that it didn't matter who you played at Rangers, pre-season friendly, bounce game at Murray Park, Barcelona with the best players in the world playing on the pitch, the Rangers fans expected to win. So you had to get your mindset knowing that no matter who you played, you had to win. I know Lionel Messi, privileged to ever get anywhere near him, never mind share a pitch with him, was like kind of anti-football after we drew 0-0 at Ibrox. But that 90 minutes, whichever way you look at it, probably gave us the opportunity to then get knocked out in third, which gave us an opportunity to then get all the way to Manchester. Yeah. So if that was anti-football and I had to do that for 90 minutes more or 180 minutes more or a million days more, I would do it if it then had the carrot at the end of it.
The downturn is on the back nine, if you want to call it that. The three fixtures coming home. You didn't play in Barcelona. You might have been suspended for that game. Is that why Rangers kind of, you know, succumbed to the 2-0 defeat in the Nou Camp that night? Is that where it all went wrong?
Well, mate, I told me that at the time, but no. I know the actual, well, I went over obviously because I was desperate to train at the Nou Camp. But it actually gave me about a week and a bit off, just the way the fixtures fell. I was like, I won't come. He's like, well, you're not booking a flight. He said, well, you better go and see Laura in the front office. And he's like, just laughed at me, and that was it. I went and got my flights booked.
Looking for a way through, he had Iniesta ahead of him. It's Ronaldinho looking for Messi round the back, and it's in off the post. Ronaldinho, great link up, good save, but Messi tucks home the rebound. Lionel Messi, Rangers' sternest critic after the game in Glasgow, puts them to the sword here.
That Barcelona team, like, Messi is probably, well, for me anyway, the best we've ever seen, and he'd probably be the best for the next umpteen generations.
Yeah,
he actually used to play to accommodate Ronaldinho in that team, and Henry, do you know what I mean?
It was a really disappointing end to that part of the campaign, and it had actually gone down to the final group game, which was against Lyon at Ibrox, and it was a reversal, quite a painful reversal of the 3-0 scoreline that Rangers had secured in France.
Trying to slip in Benzema, angles against him, oh, Gomez on the scene, and Lyon have their goal. Here's Benzema, through the goalkeeper's legs, and that is it. All over for Rangers. Benzema running at them again and finishing it off once and for all with a magnificent finish. You have to give credit where it's due, and the man who turns 20 in a week's time has just dispatched Rangers with the most clinical of finishes. It ends in tears for Rangers. They are dumped out of the Champions League. Rangers 0, Lyon 3.
There's probably an element of, if you look back, the disappointment, because after three games you had 7 points from a potential nine. So the second round of games probably felt like, oh, maybe Rangers should have done better. But like you say, that hindsight's a wonderful thing.
I think a lot of people will forget that, and obviously he's one of probably the world's best players at the moment, and didn't quote me on how many Champions Leagues he's won, but Benzema, what if he scored a double or he scored a hat-trick in the second game at Ibrox? I'm pretty sure he at least got two. And obviously, listen, he wasn't the player he was back then. I get that. He's matured and he's become even better and he's a superstar. But I think it puts into context the type of players you were playing against, because he would have been like one of the young wonder kid superstar top players back then, if you know what I mean. So it's, I don't even know what age Benzema is, but it wouldn't surprise me if I'm only a couple of years older than him.
He's 35.
35, there you go. So he's
same age as me.
There you go. while you were at uni getting beat 8-0, he was
right. I feel like an utter failure right now.
I think it was kind of give or take for most of that game. And I remember, was it Darshville had a really great chance with about 12 minutes to go?
Here's Ferguson. He's round the defender. Right across. Oh, how did Darshville miss?
Oh, I don't believe it.
Yards from goal. He had to bury it. And somehow, nobody knows how, he contrives to strike it over the bar.
Oh, Jose missed that. That was the chance. That's the chance.
And if he'd levelled it, I think that might have been enough for Rangers to get through in second place and go through to the next round. But ultimately, it wasn't to be. But did you guys have a sense of confidence dropping down into the UEFA Cup that you might be able to give a good account of yourselves there as well?
I'd definitely say that the will to win, the desire and drive and the personality and the character within that group was second to none. It was a winning machine with a winning mentality that no matter who we played, we fancied our chances to win.
You went into the round of 32 where you played Panathinaikos, a team who were kind of Champions League regulars at that point. They were in and out the group stages an awful lot. Drew 0-0 at Ibrox and then drew 1-1 away. It was an absolutely ridiculous goal. I think it was Gumas was the guy that scored fairly early on.
Garagunas, flat cross. Gumas has stayed forward. That's a decent turn, and that is a sensational goal. 1-0 Panathinaikos.
And it looked like, you know, the kind of UEFA Cup adventure might be over before it was even starting, until Nacho Novo scores with about 9 minutes left.
Is this the moment for Rangers? Ferguson sends it for Burke, who's taken up good position wide. Here's Burke, whips it in, Stephen Davis with the opportunity, Novo! Rangers score and are on the verge of going through.
What was the feeling kind of having gotten through the tie? Because my recollection, not just as a Rangers fan, but as a fan of Scottish football, was that the away goals rule always did us in. It never went in our favour for teams in Europe. So for a Scottish team to get through with a kind of, not quite last minute, but a very late away goal, it kind of felt like that was something different in and of itself.
I suppose when you look back, don't you, you think that sometimes things are just meant to be, and the luck that you ride, and listen, I don't think anyone can take it away from you, but I just think that you probably earn your own luck at times, and that group obviously certainly earned it. But you're right, you hope that these different scenarios, the different rules at different times can favour you rather than unfavour you, because there's certainly loads of hard luck stories in there.
There's loads of big games in this run, but the Werder Bremen were a really exciting team at the time as well. They had Diego, Brazilian midfielder, who eventually went to Juventus in the following season. But what's the build-up like to a game like that? Albeit later on, you'd be building up to a cup final. But that one was a massive one, right? And obviously a big one for Alan McGregor.
It wasn't. It was funny because I never, off the home game, you would never expect, you know, like when we all got a pin in the football, you know, like you just get some teams that are like really good at home and maybe not so good travellers. That's what they felt like. They looked a really average side, really, at Ibrox.
Kuzan goes for it. The goalkeeper's dropped it. He had a hurling against Juventus in the Champions League. He has a hurling in the UEFA Cup against Rangers. Speculative for Daniel Kuzan. And Tim Fisa allows the ball to squirt past him. Rangers have the lead. Davis providing the support. Kuzan has held on. He is onside. Kuzan looking for the double. The goalkeeper spilled it.
Didn't quote me on who the goalie was, but the one that he threw in for Daniel Kuzan's shot in the first leg at Ibrox was like, he probably could catch that a million times with his hat, but this time it flew in the top corner.
Yeah.
Felt like they big Danny a disservice, but he looked like the Champions League side that were miles ahead in the second leg, and probably the biggest Alamo I've ever seen in my life over in Germany.
Wow.
Ronich gets it across, headed back by Brophy. That's a dangerous place. Diego with a flip. Diego tries to bring it down. That's sensational from Diego. It's very much alive in the Vesta Stadion. Werder Bremen 1, Rangers 0.
It's probably the most one-sided battering I've ever seen. I was on the bench that night. I just recovered for a double hernia, and that's why I'd missed obviously one of the previous rounds. I actually wasn't even fit to go, but the manager had asked me to go over to Germany, and I was remember warming up behind the goal. I think maybe with Boydie when Greigsy made that save.
Watch. Took a little deflection, the header came in, and Rosenberg sends it right, and it clips off the bar. Sanogo got the touch, just sliding in. Rangers hang on by a thread. It's come back off the bar, and Rangers survive yet again. Alan McGregor, wonderful save.
It was almost one of the games you're like, wow, how would you find your second breath in that? It was just relentless, and it felt like it was going to, the inevitable was going to happen. But I suppose it goes back to that mentality and that drive and that never say never, and never really give up to want to lose games of football, really, and that group were as good as any. They just used to find a way, and that was...
Aye.
If you could ever pick a game that was momentous and one that really stood out in that run, we'd look back at that game over in Germany and think that was a defining moment, because I would reckon that they probably would have went on and won it.
My recollections of both of those games, I remember watching the home game, the 2-0 victory over Bremen with a bunch of my mates, and we couldn't believe that Rangers were winning 2-0. I remember, I think it was Lee McCulloch had a chance. It wasn't quite an open goal to make it 3-0. I think it was actually the defender gets across and prevents him from scoring when he looked certain to make it 3-0. And all of us, I think it's just the nihilism of a Scottish football fan. We were just like, oh, we're going to rue that. We needed the third goal. And you're just like getting greedy at that point. But that was the thing, because watching back the away leg of that, it's exactly as you described, Kevin, because it was just the only other time I can remember that as a football fan was Scotland versus France in Paris, the game with the famous James McFadden goal. Other than, you know, his half from 40-odd yards, it was basically just a training session for France. And I was just like, how have they not scored here? Because that's what it felt like. It was a siege on the Rangers' goal. But as you say, like, this was... Alan McGregor's obviously had an illustrious career and in two spells at Rangers, and his legend is kind of cemented now. But I think this, in my recollection, was like one of the first nights where that legend really starts to grow, because it was a performance that was so off the scale in what he was able to do. The save that you're talking about, where he somehow tips it onto the bar, where from, you know, no distance out whatsoever, and you're like, how did that not go in? You're talking about the squad mentality and everything, but like, when a player has a game like that in the midst of performances, team performances like this, is that just something where you're like, something really special is going on here? Because, you know, if they managed to breach the defence, which was stingy at best, and you had David Weir and Carlos Queller who were outstanding that season, you've got a goalkeeper like Alan McGregor to try and beat, surely that gives you a lot of confidence as well.
I suppose it doesn't bring a lot of confidence to the opposition, because they must think, why, what do we need to do to get by this? But I think when I think of Alan, and obviously we go back a long, long time, me and Alan, because his dad used to play for my dad's team down at Peebles Rovers, and he used to play with Stephen McLean for Archie Vale, so we were kids really growing up, and I know goalies are unique, but I've never seen my whole career a goalkeeper try as hard in training, 3v3s, 5v5, 9v9, fools. By the way, get the hump at certain things like individual shooting practice that's like up bang throughs and people getting unpressured shots on edge of the box and just smashing shots at them. But I've never seen someone so competitive, whether it comes to players taking penalties after training or whatever, that most goalies would potentially toss off and no bother, and oh, he's hitting an empty net, you wouldn't do that on a Saturday, blah, blah, blah. All the common shouts that you would get. Alan was as competitive as I've ever seen any player as a goalkeeper. So they saves in Bremen, in Germany, and the special moments that he's produced throughout his career is a testament to how he trains, because he trains like a beaver every single day. And and that kind of will to want to win 3v3s, 5v5s, 7v7, whatever the boys are playing and training, is how he then can perform. And being a Rangers goalie, be able to turn it on at the blink of an eye, even though you wasn't turning on at a blink of an eye because you were under the siege and probably you had to be at your finest best. But to stand and maybe watch the game for long periods and domestically in Scotland and then produce the big wonder moments is testament to just how hard he trains as an individual every day.
I've interviewed Alan and I get the impression that...
Not a great interviewer.
No, he hates it. I can tell he hates it. But the thing is, like, I get the impression that all his teammates would have celebrated him and gone like, that's an amazing save. He wouldn't have cared. He would have been like thinking the next thing. I don't know if he would have enjoyed that. he would have just been focused on the game.
Such a placid lad, and he's the life and soul of that party, as everybody knows. But he just takes everything in his stride. He just wants to go aim himself so far. Really, he's such an easygoing lad. He's not a loner, like, that's probably the wrong word, because he's a diamond, obviously. He's a real good mate of mine, but he's probably quite at peace with his own company, if you know what I mean. But I've actually only seen Griggsy. I do see him celebrate, to be fair, but I still remember when I scored the winner in the Old Firm, when I scored, there's a clip that goes behind the goal, and Alan's running, like, kind of two-thirds up the pitch, kind of fist-pumping the main stand when I scored in the Old Firm game. I don't know even when it was, 2008, 2009, maybe. And I thought it actually gave me a wee bit of goosebumps watching him celebrate more than actually watching me celebrate. So he has got that in him, but you're right, you're bang on. He's probably the saving Bremen. He probably just wanted to get in the shower and get on the team bus and get aim. That's just the mentality, really.
Well, look, the next game was kind of a big one for you personally, because you'd had to sit in the sidelines, well, certainly from the previous game, but you were injured for the one before that. So you actually then started against Sporting Lisbon, which must have been a great, great moment to just get involved and help the lads out.
I would say probably the Sporting Lisbon away game, me and Barry were obviously carrying suspensions as well. So we were conscious of that as well, obviously leading into if we did have any success. But I think what I mentioned earlier, you know, going over to France and scoring a three in the Champions League, and then obviously getting to the performances at like Sporting Lisbon, he won't score two goals. But we passed the ball for fun over there.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people forget, and it's not trying to like drive an agenda that we beat better teams than we did, but that Sporting Lisbon team were a serious outfit.
Yeah.
They had lots of young, real talent that were like get touted all over Europe for like 15, 20, 25 million at the time, which was in probably today's market right at the top of the tree. I mean, they were a real serious team, but that team with people like Brahim Hamdani and Barry Ferguson and that, you were more than capable of going and slowing the game down and looking after the ball and, you know, spending a bit of time on it. Didn't they always need to be counter-attack, even though the two goals were effectively counter-attack? You know, I mean, I think Steve Davis passing to Jean-Claude Dachauville.
Better play by Barry Ferguson, and here is Broadfoot. Nobody forward there, missed beautifully. Now, Davis, and he curls. That must be a great goal. Rangers have scored. Jean-Claude Dachauville puts it away. A wonderful, typical, classic break there by Rangers. No wonder the supporters are jubilant.
And then obviously the Whitey goal that was quite iconic. Dublin's kind of halfway through the team and then slotting it in.
That's a good tackle by Whittaker. And Rangers have 3-on-2 here. Whittaker, he might go himself here. Stephen Whittaker! Rangers semi-final! They have seized the day! And it's all gone blue!
Was he supposed to do that, Stephen Whittaker?
Just brilliant memories, really, to think that you were part of that and going toe-to-toe and playing in amazing arenas in front of like massive crowds and the magnitude and the success that comes off the back of getting big victories like that, because you then have, obviously, the next again round to look forward to and another opportunity to try and showcase your talent against some of the best. So just great memories, really.
It's one of my favourite games to look back on as a Rangers fan was the away tie in Portugal. Nothing like the Bremen game, because it definitely felt more of an equal contest. I think, you know, Rangers obviously were setting up shop to be rigid in defence and attack on the counter when they could. But they weren't taking that kind of like pummeling. It felt like a much closer game. And when Dachauville breaks the deadlock after an hour, you think, I think they'll see this out. Like, it had that feeling as a football fan watching it, just being like, I think this is going to be it. And then I wonder if you can talk us through Whittaker's goal, because, I mean, did he do that in training? Like, what was he thinking? What were you thinking when he picks the ball up and just goes on this kind of, like, you know, mazy run?
Thankfully for the Rangers fans, he never passed to me, but I obviously was winding him up saying, it's all right for you to run the line for the pitch. I'd already run about for 80 minutes before you'd done that. I'm a sub. I said, you've got plenty of energy. I actually go on the left-hand side, but just as he goes past the last defender and obviously slots it back across the goalie, I used to laugh and joke to my mates saying, he should have passed to me. But then we might end up drawing 1-1 in that game if he had passed to me instead of winning 2-0. So just amazing, really. And he's scored loads of goals for Rangers, to be fair, and scored goals right through his career. Mm-hmm. He's probably best technical fullbacks you'll get, really, left and right.
Yeah.
I played youth team with Whitty when he was always a midfielder, so he always had that kind of natural goal scoring instinct and like great technique really as an individual. It was one of these surreal moments, really. I've seen it back a few times actually on Twitter, on the archives, etc. And it's like, I think if there was another five defenders to go by, he would have just kept on going. It was like he just kept on waltzing and waltzing and waltzing, and they then have the quality. He actually, probably not the cleanest strike, to be fair, when he slots it home, but the elation in the corner and the goal and rewards the Rangers fans. I still remember the aftermath of that game, because obviously we celebrated the goal, and then not too long after the final whistle come, obviously, to late goal, to then celebrate, obviously, in that left-hand corner again was extra special, really. And I used to room with him when we went away, so... when your mate scores kind of the, maybe not the defining one, but the one that helps you reach a UEFA Cup semi-final, it's brilliant to think that you've grew up together and played together all your days, really. Hurt you right to Hibs, to them being in the kind of quarterfinal of UEFA Cup to get to the semi-finals, is nice to look back, to be fair.
Yeah, it's quite unique, actually. It adds an extra specialness to that squad in a way, because when you look at all the best squads that end up winning European competitions, there's so much money plastered all over it, whereas this Rangers squad had a lot of deep connections going back a long time. So that's really nice to look back on. And that final whistle, when that genuinely does happen, and this squad does make a major European semi-final with the chance to get a final, that's like dreamland stuff, Kevin. Like, what is that feeling like, if you can put it into words? I know you're away from home. Doing that at home would be way better. But just the atmosphere, the feeling on getting back in the plane afterwards, and you must be... you can't even know think about getting to the final, and you can't even believe that you're destined to go there as well. Like, it must be a totally different feeling from the start of the season to that point.
The food for thought's probably more now, looking back, than it was actually in the moment. In the moment, you're probably just focused and riding the crest of the wave, and when you're winning, you want the next game to come tomorrow, and the momentum just keeps on going, and the belief gets bigger and stronger. And I remember doing a Q&A maybe at a Rangers supporters club, and talking about... one of the questions was about Carlos Queller and Davey Weir playing 60, 70 games that season. You need to ask any player that doesn't want to play 60, 70 games a season, because the likelihood is you've been successful and the team's got quite far in competition, especially if you're at Rangers and Celtic. That probably means some sort of European run. It probably means getting to cup finals. It probably means getting to the last stages of competition, which is obviously why you want to be a Rangers or Celtic player. So it's... I think when I look back at the squad, never got ahead of itself because of Walter. The group never thought we were better than we were because of Walter. And I think that kept us, one, grounded, but two, hungry. When you get to a UEFA Cup semi-final, your pals start to get a bit excited for you. Your family gets a bit excited for you. Your school that you went to, Bank Peebles, all of a sudden school teachers start to want to reach out to you know, it just builds so much kind of magnitude, really, and profile for you as an individual, really. And then the group start to get voted in some of the famous Rangers teams that were far better than us. So you're building a wee bit of history for your own group, really, and you as an individual. So it's... I know it's unless we had a magic box to jump into, it's one of the times that you wish you could relive. And unfortunately, but it's amazing to look back and think you know, playing Mario Kart at 2 o'clock in the morning over in Portugal somewhere, eating probably some junk food, getting ready to fly home the next again morning, and everybody playing the DSs. They used to have a big schoolie DSs, Christian Daly's, Jiggs, Boydies, Stevie Smith's, Burkies, etc. Witties. And we used to all bash red shells at each other and fall out about who was winning, who wasn't winning, etc., etc. And it's mad to think that they're the wee memories that come back rather than some of the big performances. Or it's just amazing times, really.
Going back to Walter Smith, because that was something I wanted to pick up on. What was he like during these matches, like these occasions? Because he... Look, the picture of Cam, I think, from the TV pictures and everything, and you got brief moments where you saw him not let his guard down, but kind of like revel in the moment. So I think when Whittaker puts the second goal away in Lisbon, that, you know, you see him hugging Ali and everybody on the touchline. One of the main things that was levelled about Walter Smith from his first period as Rangers manager was this maybe a bit of a naivety around European football, where, you know, Rangers blew away all the opposition domestically during that kind of famous 9-in-a-row run. But in Europe, Rangers, one season aside, were often really poor in Europe. Was that something that he was conscious about this time around, of, you know, preparing well and giving off that vibe of the seriousness of the opponent that you're coming up against and preparing for that?
It just used to make everybody feel top of the world, really. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I've had a manager that you wanted to run through brick walls for, it would be Walter, really. He just had that way of saying the right things at the right time to stimulate you as an individual and then to stimulate the group. And I think people think that Walter was this big, brave heart, kind of stand in the changing room in front of everybody and give you like the best motivational speech you've ever had in your life every single game. But he said a few words at times. And it's funny because when I've been at different clubs, people say, oh, I hate when the changing room's quiet and like loads of music on. And that Rangers team at times was quiet and focused and more ready. And I liked that. I liked the steeliness and the calmness and the butterflies in my belly and the kind of adrenaline rushing that Walter and that group seemed to manage to create. He had a way of, no matter what's the right word without swearing, how shite you felt at times, because you might have drunk too much water, you might have ate too much food, you might have not had a great sleep, you might be really nervous. You managed to find a way that when you walked on that line, over that white line, you were ready and you could give your all. And he's probably the one manager throughout my whole career that no matter how low I was or how sore my body was, I found some more.
You had to dig deep against Fiorentina as well. Going into those two games, you were suspended again, Kevin, for the first game.
that was a premeditated one.
Really? Well, why is that?
Me and Barry got booked, and obviously in Portugal, because we ended up having to carry potentially another yellow card into obviously the semi-final, which would then could mean that we could miss the final.
So they were deliberate?
Well, not deliberate, but we obviously knew that another booking would potentially put us out a significant game. So we knew that that was the case. We knew that obviously had to be careful, and we had to make sure that we weren't getting any solid yellow cards, basically.
It was 0-0 at Ibrox in the first leg. Not the first time that result had happened on this run. And then you have to go to Florence, and there's not actually a huge amount to talk about in the whole 210 minutes that you played on the park. The only real moment of drama, I think, really was Daniel Kuzan getting sent off with about 10 minutes left of extra time. So that was kind of just backs to the wall from that point. As you're heading into the penalty shootout, I'm always fascinated by this in terms of mentality. From a footballer's point of view, like, what's going through your mind at that point? Were you actually in line to take a penalty at any point during the shootout?
I was basically next in line, so thankfully the wee man scored, because Manchester 2008 might not have happened for a lot of people. I think the mindset is, and listen, fair play to these boys, because penalties would never been my thing, really. Even though I used to score a lot when I was a kid, but when it come to kind of professional football, I was never really on them, really, and I never was one to kind of to jump at the front of the queue to take them. So for the boys to step up, especially Barry as well, and when Barry hits his penalty as well as he hits it and the goalkeeper saves it, you think it's just not going to be our night now. That's us, we've run out of luck a wee bit.
On a night like this, on this kind of occasion, they've got one foot in the UEFA Cup final. I think it's quite right that the captain steps up to take the first penalty and to lead by example.
On to save!
So for the boys, after Barry misses, to then go and step up.
Beautifully taken. Very, very cool indeed. Beautifully put in, and the pressure is now on Fiorentina.
Raheem scored, Sasha scored, Whitty scored. And I know it's a deal what did the boys of the service or even myself, but when you see Christian Vieri miss a penalty, you think it's got to be.
Now Christian Vieri, the veteran. Oh, he's put it over! He's put it over!
As soon as he put that over the bar, I thought, we're going to win here.
When he's stepping up, you're like, oh, right, maybe we'll get the next one, yeah.
Well, I thought when I was stood in the town, I'm thinking, I'm not going to get a chance anyway, because he's a great man. Then he does, and then the wee man gets to say, if ever you could bottle moments, the commentary's just iconic, really, yeah.
Nacho Novo with one kick of the ball to take Rangers to Manchester. Manchester, brace yourself.
Rangers are coming! The Scots are heading for Manchester, and you know what? Manchester may not be big enough. They won't need visas, they won't need passports, but the battle for tickets starts now. Walter Smith has guided them to their fourth major European final, a crack at their second major European trophy. And 5 years after Celtic swamped Seville, Rangers will maraud all over Manchester. And these heroes, look at him, Whittaker's in tears. Whittaker's in tears, that's how much it means. These heroes will be aiming to bring a European trophy back to Scotland for the first time since Alex Ferguson's Aberdeen 25 years ago.
I've got a few of the pictures up in my games room, obviously me and Neil Alexander's by me kissing Coist. Just special times, really. To think that at that age, as a young Scottish player, you could be playing in a European Cup final was just why we do it, really.
That's the one moment as a Scottish football fan I remember being in Ayr Uni campus. It was like massive projector, and there was literally like half of the pub went mental, and the other half went, "Oh no!" Obviously, the Celtic supporters, quite a lot of them, kind of like, "Oh no, we can't deal with this." It was quite a funny wee moment. What were you doing, Finn, when Novo scored?
So I remember watching this game in, do you remember, you know, Tennant's Bar in Glasgow that's on the corner of Byres Road and is it Highbury Road? Back in the day, there used to be almost like a second pub right next to it downstairs called The Basement. And it was great because we used to play five-a-sides in Hindland. I remember we were playing that night, and then we decided to go straight from five-a-sides in Hindland and walk down to The Basement. The good thing about The Basement was not many people knew it was there, so you kind of, even if you arrived a wee bit late, you always got a seat, and you know, you could always ask for whatever game to be put on the TV or whatever. My only other memory of that pub was that I remember seeing a poster that Pat Nevin was going to do a DJ set in there one point.
But he does, he loves his DJ.
So I was watching it with mostly a bunch of pals who were Rangers fans, although in fairness to him, one of my pals who's a big Celtic fan turned up because I'd gone with him to the pub to watch Celtic go out to Kaká's inspired AC Milan, I think the season before in the Champions League. So he'd basically come along thinking, oh, I'm going to watch Rangers lose, so this is kind of like my return. And he just spent the whole night going, I can't believe it's still 0-0 at 90 minutes. I can't believe you're going to penalties. I can't believe you got three. He was as sick as a dog at that. But I remember doing laps around the block where that is, me and my mate. It was such a euphoric sense. Like you couldn't believe that all this was happening to your team and to a Scottish team. I think that was the thing. Like it was. Mm. I also remember during the shootout, Ferguson misses the first penalty, and after two penalties each, Fiorentina were ahead 2-1, and I think it was Montolivo, who was a young midfielder for them, had scored the second one, and the image that's emblazoned on my mind was him walking away having scored his penalty, and Fiorentina were 2-1 up at that point, and he kind of brushes off his shoulder. Like he was just doing that
cheeky
to the bench
bastard.
Like just yeah, he's just like, nah, it's fine, no bother, we're through. And what was brilliant then was you know, Whittaker puts his penalty away, Papach I think sclaffs it somehow into the bottom corner. We were like, oh man, it wasn't good for the heart. And then, you know, we've just spent the round before talking about how good Alan McGregor was. Neil Alexander comes in for this game, and he's fantastic. In the game before it, in the 90 minutes, the 120 minutes before it, but his save from Liverani, like it's an amazing save of the first of the two penalties that Fiorentina failed to score, because he's diving off to his side. It's not like it's straight at him or anything. At that point as well, like you're just kind of like, oh no, Vieri. And when he blazes it over the bar, like I think it's still in orbit somewhere. They haven't fished that out the river in Florence. It's incredible with Novos that you couldn't believe it. I mean, like what's the release of emotions at that point, Kevin, when on the pitch? Like how long does it take to hit you?
Just incredible. It's hard. It's to win in a shootout in a semi-final, to get to a final on a fight. I've never managed to do it in a final to win a cup, obviously, but it's hard to put any words what you feel like especially in that, even though I was involved in almost 120 minutes, but I wasn't the one that had to go through that horrible gut-wrenching feeling. He'd obviously step up and either miss one or score one, or just, I wouldn't be able to explain what the pressure the wee man must have been feeling when he stepped up to take that penalty, even though that is his thing, the wee man. Do you know what I mean? The limelight, the kind of probably wanting to go last at that opportunity, trying to be a hero. And it's for some people, and it's no for others.
So from Montenegro to Manchester, the build up to this one, there was a fair bit of controversy involving the SFA, you know, no moving schedules and whatnot. It ended up being like an absolute nightmare fixture schedule for Rangers.
I think they had to play 8 games in 20 days over the course of May, and I think Rangers had 4 days to prepare for the final. So it came on the 14th of May. It was the club's 4th match in 10 days. They'd been away to Hibs on the 4th, at home to Motherwell on the 7th, at home to Dundee United on the 10th, and then down to Manchester for Zenit on the 14th. I mean, at this point in the season, Kevin, Rangers are actually within touching distance of a quadruple. You'd already won the League Cup in March on penalties against Dundee United, another penalty shootout. You'd made it, obviously, to the UEFA Cup final, to the Scottish Cup final, where you'd play Andrew's team, Queen of the South, in the final that year.
Brutal.
And you push Celtic to the final day. I guess it's probably a combination of fixture congestion and fatigue probably sitting in at this point in the season. This, of course, infamously is the season where Celtic said that they couldn't possibly agree to a further extension because they had a tour of Japan to get to, which, you know, famously never materialised. Maybe it'll happen this summer. I don't know. They've got the connection.
It's happening this summer.
Ange out there, so. When asked about it, Ali McCoist is on record as saying, you know, the SFA, they were a disgrace. It was embarrassing. I think the Russian Federation cancelled Zenit's 3 or 4 games prior to the final. This is still McCoy speaking. He says, I think we played something like 8 games in 18 days. It might sound like sour grapes, but no, any other country in the planet, the association would have helped out. If you're asking me if it was wrong, it was completely and utterly wrong. What was the kind of mood in the squad at that point when you kind of feel like you're not really maybe getting the help that you would want to prepare the best way that you could?
I think we were probably, as a group, we were well protected by the manager and just got on with it, really, because you do, because there's no other way. You can't feel sorry for yourself or let any negative stuff. But I think now, as a kind of ex-player, I suppose, and looking back on fond memories, it's definitely something that I agree bang on with Koistu, really. It was a disgrace, really, not to help us out. And I get how much hatred and how much rivalry there is between, obviously, the whole firm. I understand that, and I'm not going to change anyone's opinion on liking one or the other. But I think when it comes to European competition, as an ex-Rangers player, I would happily see Celtic do well in Europe, or Hibs, or Hearts, or Aberdeen, or any of the clubs, because I'm a Scottish football fan. To be a Scottish football player and play for one of the biggest clubs in the country and get an opportunity to win a competition that had no bearing whatsoever on any other team in Scotland, I thought it was really poor to not support that group of boys who and staff and everybody involved really at the football club to give them the best opportunity of being successful. Listen, we'd never ever want to know whether it would have helped or it wouldn't have helped, but the one thing I do know is if it had been granted and we had failed, then we would never have had this conversation, really. It was certainly a sour grapes for me, but I just think it's when you look back now, you could be sitting with a gold medal in that safe rather than a silver one. It is, I think, one of 6 or 7 Scottish players that played in the final. It could have been quite extra special to think that you could have been one of the Scottish players to have a European Cup final medal, even though I've got a silver one, I'd rather a gold one.
Yeah, I know. You always see it at times after the final whistle and the runners-up go up and they collect their medal, and they just kind of, a lot of them no interested. It must be so difficult, Kevin, when that happens, because the build-up and then the conclusion is just so hard to contend with. And I'm not speaking as a player who's, you know, played in a major European final. I want you to tell me what that's like, as difficult as it must be. I know we're jumping to the end here, but that's the crux of what you do as a football player, is to play in the biggest games possible, but the emotion of it must be so difficult to deal with.
It was to say that you had a hangover for a long time was probably an understatement, and obviously we had to contend with still more games to obviously come, and it was a difficult end to the season, a difficult summer, I suppose, probably desperate to get a break for everyone. But it's hard because the mindset that I had as a Rangers player is you you win a cup final on the Saturday, you're back in the gym on the Monday to get better, really. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as you get your hands on a title, you work hard that summer to get back to win another title. Do you know what I mean? So it was, I think, to join a club like Rangers, to get the taste of what winning is, and that special feeling as a player, part of a group of players, to get your hands on silverware, to then fall short in such a big game with such big build-up, and the kind of 250,000-300,000 Rangers fans that travel to Manchester, and how hot a ticket was back in the day. 15 years ago, to get your hand on the UEFA Cup final ticket, was they were gold dust. And to be involved in that was just amazing. But the harsh reality is, you look back, and not bitter's not the right word, but almost sad disappointment, really, that you just couldn't quite go over the line with a group of teammates and a group of staff that were extra special in your time. You know what I mean? Because defeats are defeats, but when you get a defeat in a UEFA Cup final, it carries a big, big hangover.
Ashav in, Denisov, 1-0! Cut open by a Russian knife, Igor Denisov! And Rangers have the final to chase. Zirianov, Ashav in, Fatih Tekka, 2-0 all over. Zenit St. Petersburg will carry home the UEFA Cup. And it was the last kick of the match. It is Zenit, worthy winners. For Rangers, one hurdle too high, 1 mile too far, one extraordinary adventure which will never be forgotten, but which ends in tears.
We just fell short on the night. We never got our noses in front. By the way, it was only at half time, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? We were well in the game, and you could argue the game plan was going well. We had a couple of half chances, really, but I actually felt really confident in the game and comfortable. I just remember it being a right muggy, sticky night, really, do you know what I mean? And yeah, not much air, and probably generated for like the fans outside, and it just felt strange, really, to then have that final whistle and that tear, that sadness after the game is heartbreaking, really, do you know what I mean? I've had a few disappointments in my career, but that one would be right up there.
And two Rangers club legends as well, having to enjoy that though as well, and the manager of Zenit St. Petersburg, Dick Advocaat, and Fernando Rixon was in that squad as well. Finn, what was that emotion like for you?
It's a really peculiar one, because I think I'm still in my 20s at that point, and also having lived through Rangers very narrowly missing out on getting to the first ever Champions League final in 92-93 when I was a really young boy, I think you just kind of accept that these things happen. I think with the benefit of hindsight, and actually having experienced Rangers getting to another European final last year, you realise that these are potentially once in a lifetime things. I think there was a weird momentum as the games went on, which was, it was different between 2008 and 2022, because I think in 2008 it just seemed to be like we were so happy to be on this adventure as Rangers fans. I think because you knew every tie you went into, you were the underdogs. And to get through it, you would just be like, I'm buzzing, I can't believe we got through that. Rather than going into the games necessarily, I mean, this is just my experience, I'm sure there were lots of very nervous Rangers fans ahead of all these games. But there was just an excitement. And I think going into the game in Manchester, I think we were, as fans, happier to be heading into a final against Zenit St. Petersburg, who were a much more unknown quantity than if it had been Bayern Munich in the final. But maybe that might have gone in our favour. But I think the overriding feeling at the end of the game was just like, it was one game too far. Like there was, obviously you're gutted not to have won the trophy, but there was such pride in what your team had achieved, getting to the final, and the memories that they'd given you on the way to get there, that I don't remember there being, certainly it wasn't the same crushing disappointment, I think, of, and maybe that's because it was a penalty shootout, of 2022, of last year, and maybe again that's with the passage of time it gets easier, but you just felt so proud, and it felt like just one step too far, because I think, you know, Zenit didn't score until it was about the 72nd minute or something like that in the game, so Rangers were still in it up until that point. And actually the second goal doesn't go into, I think it was like the 94th minute when Rangers are probably trying to get something and Zenit hit on the counter. So it was a relatively close game, but it still hurts going back. Kevin, in the past you've spoken about how disappointed you are with having not won against Zenit in Manchester. Does that feeling get easier, any easier with time, or does it still kind of rankle with you?
No, it doesn't get any easier. And then I think of like Ryan Kent's opportunity right at the death, an inch or two either side of the goalkeeper's legs, and the team probably would have won the Europa League. It's the thin lines, and it's I probably as a player don't agree with it, but I do see it in the respect that I agree with what you're saying with the fans. Like every fan I come across, and when you speak about Manchester, like, oh, greatest time of my life and best journey ever, like unbelievable season, like the trips, the journey, the teams, the elation, kind of the journey all the way to Manchester was extra special. I suppose from a player's perspective, it's hard to try and be happy when you get beat, if you know what I mean. But I do understand that the group probably did overachieve getting it there. And I know, obviously, it's now going to make me look a bit stupid, but I thought when we got to the UEFA Cup final in 2008, I genuinely thought it was impossible.
Yeah.
I genuinely thought it was impossible. And I know Celtic had obviously been in one a few years prior.
Yeah.
And then obviously I know the team then got to Seville, what, over a decade later. So my theory is out the window. But I did think at that time, when we were grouped in the Champions League, to have the passes that we had, to have the Alamo against Werder Bremen, to have the McGregor save, to have the night in Florence, the game in Sport in Lisbon, when you look back, it's almost a bit surreal to think that that team managed to get to where it got to. But it certainly doesn't make the pill easier to swallow that we fell short on the final hurdle.
What was Walter Smith's message after you went back in the dressing room? How did he pick you up?
There's always this a wee story for you. I never actually got to speak to Walter after, because I was one of the players selected to do a drugs test. So I actually missed the aftermath, and I would have missed the aftermath celebration, because I was one of, I think, four. There was two. I want to say Christian Daly might have been the other one, but obviously he had never played, so I'm sure he could have obviously given a urine sample quite easily, whereas I'd obviously played the whole game. So it was, I actually got Tumashuk's jersey, because he was drug tested, who was obviously the captain that night for Zenit. So I swapped jerseys with him in the wee medical that we had to obviously do our urine sample. But it took me about 3 and a bit hours to pee. So a car had been left for me in the dock. I just remember coming back into the change room and it being empty. Jimmy Bell and David Lavery were still there cleaning up, waiting for us so I could get a shower. My strip was still there, because I had that horrible kind of gut-wrenching feeling that I'd gave to my shoot, my strip that I had on, and that somebody might have half-inched my other strip that obviously we had in the butt. And I was gutted to think that I might not have one of my own, but to be fair to Jimmy, he wouldn't let anyone steal obviously one of the boys' strips. So but when you've got boydies and that kicking about, you can never be sure half-inching all the strips. But I got back into the change room and obviously got showered and changed, and then me and the dog Jackson got a private car back to obviously the hotel. So I never actually, sadly, got an opportunity. I still remember Walter coming round, obviously, us on the pitch, and he being a bit teary-eyed and putting his kind of hand on our shoulders and giving us a wee kind of hug, if you know what I mean. But I didn't actually know, and I've never actually asked any of the boys what was said after that game. So then, apart from obviously seeing everybody at the hotel, when I eventually got back, you know what it's like, once you start, you can't stop. So I was peeing Powerade and water for the next 10 hours after that.
That's absolutely brutal. You didn't really have too long to ruminate on the defeat either, because just 3 days later you were back to domestic duties again, away at Motherwell on the 17th of May, away to St Mirren 2 days after that, and then 3 days later you were away at Aberdeen on the final day of the season with, I think there was less than 48 hours between the final league game and going into the Scottish Cup final as well to play Queen of the South. Just an absolutely mad run. I mean, in total, Rangers played a colossal 68 competitive matches in the 2007-2008 season, winning both the domestic cups, but ultimately losing the title to Celtic on the final day and finishing runners-up in the UEFA Cup. I know you've talked about the disappointment is still there, but with time, are you able to look back on that season now as a success and amidst part of what was actually a very successful spell in your career at Rangers?
I think you'd naturally do, and you look back at like the trophies we won, and obviously two in a row before I left to go to Middlesbrough, and obviously the boys then went on and won 3 in a row. But it's just the nature of the beast, really. You always want more, I suppose. It's I find it really difficult to get out of that mindset, where I've seen like a lot of social media in the last few days of different teams winning trophies, unless I've done it at Kelly just last year as a manager, and I'd done it as a player, but the mentality was to win, and it was ingrained in you, and it was getting ingrained in you every day by the people that you're rubbing shoulders with. So when you fell short, and some people probably look back and think that it was a really good era, but I still think we could have won more. And part of me will always be a wee bit disappointed that not moving to Middlesbrough and blaming Middlesbrough, but like where the club went to in my era. So like one part of me like really lucky to play like what I touched on earlier, but then probably nobody could ever envision Rangers going through the hardship that they had to go through, do you know what I mean? And probably winning a double the next again year and being a kind of mainstay in the team and at a right good age really, I think 25, 26 before I went to Middlesbrough, to then move was probably one of the things that I look back on with a wee bit of disappointment, because I think if that group had potentially stayed together, we could easily went and racked up a few titles, which would have then escalated and obviously more winners' medals and maybe a longer time spent at the club, if you know what I mean. So that's probably one you look back, you're proud and you enjoyed the moments, but I cannot change who I am really. We always wanted more and win one and they win the next one and probably feeling like, and I do, I've answered it on question and answers when I've said I've been really honest and if I could have my chance again, I would do more.
So you didn't want to leave Rangers then, really?
I never really, but it was a really difficult time for the club and probably Walter and maybe a few others were maybe the only ones that knew that, do you know what I mean? And whether Walter did or he didn't, I genuinely didn't know, but the one thing that I would say is that Walter did tell me I didn't need to go if I didn't want to, but I only had a year left on my contract, and I know it's kind of flipping a stone a wee bit or tossing a coin, because I do think that the relationship that I've got with the Rangers fans, in one side, even though this might sound a bit of a stupid terminology, quite lucky that I got them the club good money at the time for me. We only left a year left on my deal, because if I had stayed, the club genuinely wouldn't have been able to offer me a deal to keep me, so I would have left as a free Bosman. And I'm not sure, even though it would have been out with my control, I'm not so sure some parts of the Rangers fans would have been forthcoming and accepting that. When you look at some of the other players that did have an option to either keep the contract or move, might not have quite as good a reputation. And listen, that's only their individual choice. But I do think back that I've got that lucky Kenny card again, that to get the club the money that they paid for me off of Hibs, back off of Middlesbrough and the service that I gave, and probably hopefully the loyalty that I showed and the determination as a player, probably maybe gave me the reputation that I've got with it. I might be miles off of the Rangers fan, but obviously need to answer that. But I do think I was, when I look back, a wee bit hard done by in the respect that if the club had been on a level pegging with Celtic as such, that I could have stayed for another 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. I was probably, I could easily had my best years ahead of me really, for considering what we'd already achieved.
It's interesting because you look at some of the heroes and the legends and the best regarded players. Of course, there are players like Gascoigne and Loudrup will be on the tip of the tongue in terms of players that the fans enjoyed. But I think, you know, you look at a lot of Rangers icons, it goes a long way when somebody has that heart, that graft, that determination, that grit. I think that's something that the fans really respond to, and I think that's something that's, I think that's one of the reasons why you're held in very high regard by the Rangers fans, Kevin, and not just yourself but that team in general, because there were so many people that gave everything and kind of like wrung every screed of energy that they had out for the team. And I think that's the thing, no matter, you know, it maybe didn't end up the way that you would have wanted it to, but still, for the time that you were there, it was an amazing period, and the fans definitely responded to that in the way that you did it and that team. And just kind of thinking, like, looking towards the future, I mean, you've not really disguised your ambitions of what you want to achieve now from the dugout, now that you finished your playing career, and that you'd like, you know, to maybe get the opportunity to be back in the Ibrox hot seat one day. I mean, how do you feel that ambition is realised?
I've always been the type of person that, like, if you're in it, you want to kind of be the best as such, and it's, I live my life to be humble and respectful to people, and it was part of my team talk every single week at Celtic about being respectful, about being humble, because it's what I believe in. And I try and be really respectful to other clubs, but in Scotland, the harsh reality is I'm never going to be the Celtic manager. It's just, I'm never going to be it. So, and by the way, I think Celtic are a brilliant football club. I think they've had a brilliant season, blah, blah, blah. Go on about it. I've never, ever, ever, and I never disrespected them when I was a player either. But the harsh reality is I know that somebody within the Celtic board is never going to employ me as their manager. I get that. I'm not naive. And fans shouldn't be that naive either. But I get a wee bit annoyed when people think that you shouldn't aim at the top. And the harsh reality is the top in Scotland for me would be being the Rangers manager. I'm a Scottish player. I'm not an English player. I've not got any alignment to any clubs down south really that would potentially as an ex-player, even though I know I played for Middlesbrough. So it's like, I find it a bit stupid that people get a bit on their high horse as if like you've got some sort of ambition to want to get to the top. I think we should all have that ambition to get to the top, and that can look different for loads of different people. But and I also I'm not naive to think that it's probably easier to win the Euro Millions than it is to be the Rangers manager. I totally understand that, but while I'm in it and while I get opportunities to try and be the best, I want to get to the top. And listen, I've now went 11 months now without a job after winning the League Two title at Kelly, and it annoyed me a wee bit that certain people thought that we were being sneaky and we were running away to a different job and we weren't doing the right thing, and the harsh reality is that now makes them look a wee bit stupid because we've sat in this for 11 months. And I genuinely like to think I'm as honest as they come, really. And that next opportunity comes, I'll grab it with both hands. If it doesn't come, then I can't cry about it. I can't like lose any sleep over it. I'll just enjoy my family. I'll enjoy my time. I've got my own academy. And if I do get another opportunity, then and it's kind of suits and somebody believes in what we do, then great. If they don't, then I can't get too downbeat about not getting opportunities, really. So listen, I do have aspirations. I feel as though the journey that I've had to date, you know, starting academy, being the 13s, the 15s, the 18s, the B team, then taking the opportunity to leave Rangers to go to Kelly to then win a league, to then decide that we felt as though it was far as we could kind of go with the club as such. I think we've done okay, to be fair. Do you know what I mean? And that's like, I'm not trying to be modest or trying like underplay what we've achieved, but I think we've done okay. I think we've got a long, long way to go to prove how good we can be. But at the same time, so far, we've not failed, which I think is quite a nice thing to hold on to. Which I know failing can sometimes just be around the corner in management because it's so difficult. But at the same time, you know, I've spent a lot of hours on the pitch, and I continue to spend a lot of hours on the pitch. And if I get somewhere, I'd like to think a lot of people wouldn't grudge me it because I've spent a lot of time and a lot of hard work trying to get to where I've got to.
There's not many managers in this industry that can turn around and say they've not been sacked. So.
I'm sure someday I'll then go and find this podcast in 3 years' time after I put the tin tack somewhere.
Yeah, maybe I've set you up a wee bit there, but I've got no doubt, Kevin, you'll get back in the dugout. I'd like to see that. Laura, if she was with us right now, would be squinting at you saying the top job was Rangers or Celtic. She'd be saying it was the Scotland job, because that's the only thing that matters to that woman. But there you go, mate, that's been absolutely brilliant. It's been so good to speak to you. Recollect, all of that stuff was amazing, really weird, and getting to mention my 8-0 defeat as a manager wasn't the best, but there we go. Cheers, Kevin.
It was a pleasure. Appreciate it.